Hello, and welcome to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur, where Hayut Yogev speaks with entrepreneurs for entrepreneurs about reaching or missing the critical point of approaching the right customer with the right message at the right time and place. The point where business success starts. And here is your host, Hayut Yogev.
Reach or Miss, episode 43. Bruce Van Horn is a best-selling author, speaker, thought leader, transformational life coach, business and leadership coach, marathon runner, and cancer conqueror. Bruce hosts the Life is a Marathon podcast, which has millions of listeners in over 210 countries around the world. Bruce is passionate about sharing his life experiences and respected insight to help people overcome their negative thinking and limiting beliefs and develop a winning mindset. Bruce loves coaching people to become the fullest expression of who they were created to be. He lives in Richmond, Virginia. Bruce Van Horn, what a pleasure to have you here. Hi.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
It's great having you here. Thank you for coming. I just shared with our listeners what you have done until now, and I would like to ask you to share with us, what are you doing and most passionate about today, and where are you heading?
What I do now, I speak. I am an executive and life coach, a business and leadership consultant. I've been doing this for about 6 years now. I realized that all of the experiences that I had had in my life, personal tragedies of my life, I lost everything filing bankruptcy a couple years after my daughter's death, and just before my divorce, I was at a very, very low place in my life to the point where I was actually suicidal. I was driving around my hometown for bridge overpasses to jump off of. At that point, I had two boys. It was my middle daughter who passed away, but I didn't even like being a dad. I dreaded waking up every morning. I just hated everything about my life at that point. And it was actually through the process of running a marathon. My older brother challenged me. He was a marathon runner. And so he challenged me to run a marathon that year with him. Now, I thought he was crazy. I didn't want to do it. But I was like, you know what? Why not? And it was actually through the process of running a marathon that I learned so much about myself and what it was that was holding me back in my life. I was at that point in total victim mode. I had a long list of everything that was wrong with my life and things that hadn't gone right in my life. And I had a correspondingly long list of everybody or everything that was to blame for those problems. And I wasn't on that list. Uh-huh. And what I learned after getting very far into marathon training was that if you aren't successful at training for your own marathon, that's all on you. Personal accountability, personal responsibility is the only way to run a marathon. If you don't do the training, you can't blame somebody else. You can't subcontract it. You know, you can't hire a marketing team to go out and do your marathon training and then blame them if it doesn't work well. And I realized that the number one problem that I had in my life was a thinking problem. It was a thinking problem. And I got up every morning and I did my marathon training. And I realized, first of all, you can't train for a marathon with a negative mindset about whether or not you can do it. You know, if you keep waking up every morning and say, oh, I just can't do this, I can't do this, your body will eventually say, you know what, you're right, we can't. But if you wake up with a mindset that says, you know what, not only can I do this, but I'm going to do this, and I know exactly why I'm going to do this. And so it's all about having a big why. And as I had completely transformed my body. I was no longer overweight and out of shape. I was a marathon runner. And I realized that my brother very early on said something I thought was absolutely ridiculous. He said, "Bruce, the hardest part about running a marathon is making the decision to do it." Now, I thought that was crazy because I thought the hardest part about running a marathon was the actual running part. But he was right, but I misunderstood him. The hardest part about running a marathon is making the decision to do it. But I thought he was talking about a decision that you make once. But this is a decision that you have to make every single day of your life. To get up, to do the things necessary to become the person that you believe that you're capable of becoming. And once I realized that about how it transformed my body, I started to apply that philosophy to every area of my life. And so my finances started to turn around again after my second bankruptcy. My relationships got better. I started enjoying my life. Mm-hmm. And people started to notice that I was no longer a negative, pessimistic, sarcastic person. And they started asking me what was going on in my life. And so I just started telling them. And I got invited to be somebody's life coach. He was in sales. And he said, "Dude, I don't know what it is that you've got, but I want it. And I want to hire you to be my life coach." And I had never even heard of the phrase life coach before. I had heard about consultants and I knew all about psychologists and counselors and therapy and all of that. But so he told me his idea of a life coach. And I was like, "All right, whatever, I'll do this." And he paid me $20 per session. We met at a Starbucks for coffee once a week. And it just worked really, really well. And I found that that was really my gift, was being able to, I realized that all of the experiences that I had had in my life between, you know, being very involved in large businesses, understanding leadership, and going through the personal tragedies of my life and coming out on the other side of them, having been a better person for having had those experiences, really set me up to what I do for a living now, which is working with people on their mindset, on their businesses, on their visions, helping them, you know, have an endurance mindset, helping them climb the mountains of their life, both physically and metaphorically. But really, it's about ascending. I discovered yoga and I discovered meditation and really getting very clear about your state of consciousness. So sort of how I got to where I am now and what I do. And so what I do now is I speak. I am an executive and life coach, a business and leadership consultant. So I work with businesses pretty much of all sizes, everything from, you know, 10 to 15, 20 employees or a solopreneur, all the way up to large corporations. I talk about branding and energy within businesses and how the idea that the biggest enemy of your business is thinking that you have competition. And that kind of runs people's world because we live in a very competitive culture. And when I show up to a business and say, "You know what, you've got to completely forget the word competition. You have to create the greatest products. You have to create the greatest customer experience." And when you are so focused on the act of creation, competition is irrelevant.
I agree with you so much. I say it for years and I couldn't agree more. How long have you doing this new way of thinking with people? How long since you've started to be a life coach together with your consultancy?
Yeah, so I've been doing this for about 6 years now. I took an entire year off in 2014. I was diagnosed. I had stage 4 prostate cancer, and the treatment for that and the surgery for that had a lot of complications. And so I took almost a year off. I maintained just a handful of clients during that time, but I really focused on recovery. I also focused more on my mindset and focusing. Again, we will always get more of what we focus on. And so it kind of, I had to teach my doctors how to work with me because I did not allow them to talk to me about cancer or fighting disease. You know, whatever it is that you're fighting will only grow. And so I had to work with my doctors on talking to me about health and strength. And, you know, I said, don't come in here and talk to me about cancer or fighting the disease. I said, let's talk about strength and getting healthier.
It's like their competitors, isn't it?
Exactly. You know, and so my surgeon told me, he came to my bedside and he said, Bruce, you know, I know that you love to run marathons. I just have to, as your doctor, I just have to break some bad news to you. I had to do a lot of cutting inside your abdomen, including the muscles that are your core strength muscles. And he said, I think we might in about 6 to 7 months be able to get you back to easy jogging.
Hmm.
And maybe at some point in a year or so, you can start running 5Ks or 10Ks just for fun. But I think the days of your competitive running and certainly the days of your marathon running are over. And I said, well, okay, thank you for your concern. I think you shared it with me from a position of love and just wanting to, you know, not set me up for failure. But his agreement with reality was not my agreement with reality. And on the 1 year anniversary of me coming home from the hospital, about the time he thought I might run my first 10K, I ran the Boston Marathon. And so he was pretty shocked at that and thought I was pushing too hard. But again, it's all about, you know, what you believe is possible and taking the action to do it and completely eliminating negative thinking from your life, because the only thing that holds you back, you know, I don't know what everybody's spiritual belief is about God or whatever, but if we believe this, there is this all-powerful force in the universe, there are no obstacles. There is nothing that is impossible for this force, for God. And I believe that all of us are made from this being and by this being, or there is a part of that divine nature in each of us. And so if we feel like there are obstacles, or if we feel like we're overwhelmed or we're worried or we're anxious, we're not tapped into that part of us that is divine and focused on creating and focused on just enjoying life. And so I bring all of this to the corporate world, and you know, that's kind of what I do.
I just wanted to ask you to share with us your best advice for entrepreneurs about your concepts and beliefs of the way you should actually connect and approach your customers. What is your best advice to our audience regarding customer focus and customer approach?
Sure. Well, I think obviously, and you say it so much in just about every one of your episodes, that you really have to put on the shoes of your customer. And why would, you know, if you were a customer of your product, why would you want this? How would it benefit you? You know, would you buy your own product or service? And really understand, again, that if you're focused on the competition, you're not focused on your customer. But if you're focused on your customer and solving people's problems, making their lives easier or enhancing their enjoyment of life, that's what you've got to get to, you know. And the great Zig Ziglar, I think just about...
I just saw a video of him. I didn't know him.
Yeah. Friends, I never got to meet Zig. It was always on my bucket list, and I came very close to meeting him just before he passed away, but I'm friends with his son, Tom. But I loved what Zig Ziglar always said about sales and marketing. And sometimes sales can have a bad reputation. But it's one of the reasons I do my podcast. It's one of the reasons I have over 500,000 Twitter followers, is because I have a mindset about life that has radically changed my life. And I believe that if more and more people develop my mindset or at least approach their lives using the same kind of tools and ideas that enhanced my life, I believe it can add value to their lives. And so what Zig Ziglar said was that if you have a product or a service or even a message that can benefit the life of another human being, you have a moral obligation to tell as many people as possible about your product, service, or message, and then let it be up to them whether or not to buy. So you don't have to use gimmicks, and you don't have to ever beg or plead or manipulate. You just present what your product is, how it has enhanced the lives of your life, first of all. You know, that's the other reason I think most people start their own businesses, is because they've solved a problem in their own life or discovered how to solve a problem for somebody else, and they want to replicate that process. And I think as long as everybody keeps that in mind, and what happens in a lot of businesses is that, you know, the person who starts the business has all of the right energy, has all of the right mindset for why it is they want to start their business, to sell their, you know, to make their product, to get their product in the hands of other people. And it could be a service or whatever it is. They start with the right mindset, but then they get caught up and they get distracted in the actual running of the business, the marketing, the accounting, the managing of employees. And they get so caught up in the mechanics of running their business and the stress of dealing with personnel that they forget why they started the business to begin with. And so coming back to the basics, loving what you do and loving the value that what you do adds to the lives of other people, when you have that energy goes out. You know, everything is energy. And so if you've got a mindset of competition and, oh, I've got to beat that person to the deal, then you've already lost. So if you're focused on creating, if you're focused on having a great positive experience with your customers, which is why you started the business to begin with, then stay in that mindset.
Wow, I love this advice. It's different in the way you say it, and I love it.
But it's the truth.
It is.
Yeah, I think every entrepreneur I've ever talked to, you know, by the time they get 10 or 12 or, you know, 500 employees, they just want to go back to when they were building their product in their garage and loving what they were doing. And, you know, so that's, a lot of them forget why they started to begin with.
I want to ask you, can you share with us what is your biggest, most critical failure with customer? The one that affected your entrepreneurial journey or your business career the most?
Well, there were many, and sure, my first bankruptcy was driven by that. I was in my early 30s, and I was doing very, very well. I had started off my career in, this was long before the personal computers were really, really popular. And so I was working for a division of IBM that was selling what were called mid-range or large computer systems. And so I was selling mini computer systems for IBM and did very, very well at that. And I had someone approach me saying, Bruce, you're really, really good at this. Let's start our own business. And so we started the business, and it was a bad deal to begin with, because the whole idea of the business was, you know, well, while we had products and services that were good, we weren't creating anything. We were just reselling other people's products, other people's computers. And while that's okay, you know, there's nothing wrong with it, but there's a reason that Michael Dell, you know, has been so successful. He didn't want to just sell other people's computers. He wanted to build his own computers and make them the best. But our entire mindset, again, I take full responsibility for it, which I didn't then, but I bought into the idea that happiness comes from making a lot of money. And I was getting a lot of pats on the back. I was the number one salesman in my division for IBM, and I was typically the youngest person in my division. And so I got a lot of praise, a lot of awards, and I loved the attention And I thought that that was what happiness was. And so the idea of starting my own business was really about how much money yeah. can we make and how fast can we make it. And I took a lot of bad business advice. I had some wise older men speak into my life saying, Bruce, this isn't the way to do business. And I was like, yeah, well, I'm young and I'm really successful and I know what to do. And I didn't listen to wisdom. I listened to pop culture and I listened to popularity. And while we did really well at the beginning, it all quickly turned around because really all we were focusing on was trying to make as much money as we possibly could. And that was embarrassing because I wound up losing everything. I wound up filing bankruptcy. I lost my house. I lost my car. I lost everything.
Do you think it was something to do with the customers or only something?
You know, it all had to do with me. And again, now that I understand what I was doing, my customers saw through what I was trying to do. And they really took me for the get rich quick guy that I was. I didn't really think that I was at the time, but when I look back on it now with 20 plus years of experience behind me, if I could go back and tell that 30-year-old Bruce, I would have said, listen to those older men who spoke into your life and said, focus on working, providing solutions for customers, not trying to sell something as fast as you can and making money because that never lasts. And, so that's so that it was embarrassing. I learned a lot from it. I won't work with anybody who calls me and says, Bruce, we want to bring you in because we want to turn our business around so that we can make more money. I say, no, that's not really the reason why you want to turn your business around. It's not. You might think it is, but here's the deal. I've actually never met anybody who wants money. Do you know anybody who wants money? You probably know a lot of people who think they want money. Now, there's nothing wrong with money. Yeah, money is awesome, but money is just a tool. It's a resource that you can
use. Yeah, but a lot of people, that's what they focus in, especially on the startup scene.
Right. So, when somebody says, I want $1 million, and $1 million is almost nothing these days, but let's use that number. They say, well, I want $1 million. I say, well, why? Well, because then I can do all of these things. And I said, well, why do you want to do all those things? And by the time I ask why about five times, we've really gotten down to what their core values are. And I said, okay, so you really don't want money. You want to serve other people. You want to enhance the life. You want to make this world a better place. You're ultimately an altruist. You're ultimately a philanthropist. Now, money can help you do that, but what you want, all of your energy in getting money is misplaced. If you spend your energy on the core of enhancing the lives of others through this product, well, the money will just show up. The money is the fruit. If imagine you're an apple tree that, if you're a baby apple tree in an apple orchard, and you're looking around at all of the more mature apple trees that have apples dangling from their branches, you can understand the absurdity of the young apple tree saying, oh my goodness, I want apples. I need apples. I'll do anything to have apples because when I get apples, then I'll be an apple tree. Well, you are an apple tree, and the apples will be the fruit of you being the best apple tree that you can possibly be. It's not that the apples will make you best. It's when you are what you were born to be, focusing on your uniqueness and your gifts and your enjoyment of being who you are, the fruit will just grow. And so I find that's where I missed the boat when I was in my early 30s. I was in pursuit of the apples rather than letting the apples be the fruit that just naturally evolves in my life.
That's beautiful. And now I would like to ask you to share your biggest success with the customer. And I would like to ask you to tell us a story of perhaps your greatest or the one you remember, the most significant success as a result of the right customer focus or something that you did right with customers, or if you prefer to tell about one of your customers' story, it's okay as well.
Yes, sure. So I worked with a CEO who, he was a brand new CEO of a large I won't mention his name or the organization because of a confidentiality agreement. But this was one of the largest spiritual organizations here in the United States. Well, they have a worldwide spiritual following for their teaching and their philosophy of God. Most of their work is here in the United States. And so they hired a new CEO, and part of his executive compensation package, because he had never been a CEO before, was executive coaching. And so they hired me to be the coach for this new CEO of this large religious spiritual organization. Yeah. And we wound up working together, and he was telling me about some of the difficulties that they had. And about 15 years ago, they were at the height of their donations, of their follower base. They were bringing in, you know, in the neighborhood of $500 million a year in donations, and through the sale of spiritual publications. They were doing really, really, really well. And from that point on, publication sales went down and donations went down, and they brought him in to save the day. And again, the board of directors who hired him, they were still missing the point. And the problem that, you know, he thought that, you know, he needed to come in with new ideas for marketing and new ideas for leading the internal organization, because they had fallen from about 400 employees to about 250 employees over this 15-year period. And after working with him and really understanding what happened at the beginning 15 years ago that led them to where they are now, and what had happened was that their board of directors at that point, they were pastors, they were religious leaders who didn't really have a lot of business management experience. They were just doing what they loved to do. They felt they were doing what they felt called by God to do and to share with the world. And what happened was somebody said, okay, you know what? We bring in hundreds of millions of dollars every year. We have 400 employees at our headquarters. We need to start operating like a corporation. And so they made this shift, and they hired a CEO who had no religious or spiritual background. She had big business. She had been the CEO of another very successful publishing company, and it wasn't even related to spirituality. They said, we are going to hire the best people for the roles that we need, regardless of what they believe. And they didn't realize that when they started doing that, donations started going down instead of up. And so when this new guy came in, and I'm working with him not only on his mindset and his idea, branding is all about energy. Okay, so your company's brand is the story that your customers are telling about your business, your interaction with them. So everything is energy. But once we got down to it, he told me that they had a weekly chapel service in their chapel on their campus. And he invited me to come to it when I was doing an on-site visit. And he said, now, you know, we can go to this thing, and it'll be a good way for you to learn more about what we do here. But there will only be about 10 or 15 people there. And I said, well, why are there only 10 or 15 people? He said, well, I understand there used to be well over 100 people there every time we did it. But as we've moved on, the overwhelming majority of our employees, they don't practice this spiritual belief. Hmm. And I said, that's your problem. I said, you've got people producing literature. You have, everything is energy. So everything radiates out from the person who answers the phone to the person who develops your marketing literature or your prayer guides or whatever it is, all of that energy goes out of your building into the world. And if people who are working in your organization don't believe the very same things that you're encouraging other people to believe, that energy is attached to every box. It's attached to every phone call. And I said, your problem isn't going out to attract more customers. Your problem is all internal. You've got parenting issues. You need to, and part of it is going to be by starting to shift that philosophy. And again, I go back to Zig Ziglar, who always said, hire for attitude, not aptitude. And they had done just the opposite. They had hired for skill set, not for attitude or energy or belief. If you hire people who are totally on fire for your product or service or message, then that energy will radiate out. And we can send them to marketing training. We can send, send the right people off to IT training. But if we just bring in outsiders who only care about IT and not the overall message of the organization, that's the problem. And so the success was that once he started making that idea and communicating that back to the board of directors and back to the leadership team, they did go through a round of firing, and they wound up bringing people in who were out in the field already believing in their belief system. Within a year, donations and publication subscriptions were up over 50% from where they had been the year before that.
Wow.
And so again, just coming back to this idea that it's, there are just so many wise teachings out there. Hire for attitudes. Hire. Did you ever read Jim Collins's book, his two classics, Built to Last and Good to Great?
I've read the two of them.
I highly recommend it. So Jim Collins used this idea. He says, it's more important to have the right people on the bus.
The bus. I say it all the time.
Than it is to even know where the bus is going. Because once you get the right people on the bus, that can determine where the bus goes. And the second most important thing is to get the wrong people off the bus at the very next stop, because their negative energy is going to mix with other people's positive energy and create a neutral environment. And this is not what you want in your business. And so that, I think that's one of my biggest success stories. And it's actually something that with a lot of businesses is getting them to realize it's more important to hire people who are in love with your brand, who, when they're not on the clock, they're still excited about who they work for and the value that their product or service is adding to the world.
Wow. I want to ask you one more question before our final question. There are many things that affect success.
Yes.
And you talked about a few of them. And I would like to ask you, out of all these things that you're talking about today, what is the one key success factor for you? Because there is always one thing that changes it all. What is your key success factor?
The number one key success factor is it's really about your mindset, and it's about what you believe is possible. If you don't believe it's possible, there was a guy named Richard Bach who said, argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they are yours. So if you start coming up with the reasons why you can't be as successful as you want to be, then you have created the reason for why you can't be as successful as you want. There is absolutely nothing that holds us back. If one person has been successful doing what you want to do, it's proof positive that it can be done.
Right? And that was really the main thing that helped you?
Absolutely. When I was lying in a hospital bed, not sure if I would even stay alive, and then part of my problem was was because of the complications of this radical abdominal surgery that I had. I lost a lot of blood. And because of that, they weren't able to give me the painkillers that you normally need when you've had abdominal surgery. So I was in just horrific pain for many, many days. And I had to get very, very, very clear about what was going on in my head. And I couldn't think about tomorrow. I couldn't think about even the next hour. I had to get very, very clear about what I want, what I'm capable of doing. And what I ultimately wound up with sounds a little weird, but I realized that the fact that I could actually feel the pain was a good thing. And that the feeling would fade, and at someday soon I would go back to feeling pleasant things, like the caress of a cheek, or petting my cat, or hugging my boys, because physical feeling is a good thing. Now, so I didn't want to not feel. I didn't want to feel the pain, but I realized that. So again, realizing that our mind is always going to create our reality. And so if I laid in bed, I could have gone back to being a victim. Oh, bad stuff always happens to me, or this shouldn't have happened. How is it that I can be in this hospital in so much pain and they can't figure out a way to take my pain away? Well, that would have been totally useless energy. So I totally focused on healing and controlling my mind, because that's ultimately the only thing that I can control at this point. I can't make old doctors or nurses, or, you know, I can't just, you know, make a wish and poof, my stomach goes back to feeling perfect, but I can control every single thought. It's just about, it's like running a marathon, though. You have to train that muscle and learn how to do it.
Yeah, I'm sure I'm not running marathons, but I'm sure it's all about the mind. That's for sure. And we've read all the stories, but my son does.
Right. We all run runs of our life, metaphorically. We all, you know, there's a Mount Everest that we are all trying to climb.
Oh, you're bringing me to the mountain question. I would like to ask you, I always imagine this climbing of marketing, taking this ownership in the mind of the customers. It always reminds me climbing the mountain. And I wanted to ask you whether you thought of climbing.
Yeah. Well, so I love the climbing metaphor. And I actually have I do group online coaching. I work with another gentleman named Bill Courtwright, and the two of us have partnered on building an online coaching community called the Climber Community, at climbercommunity.net. And it's this idea that we all have the mountains of our lives to climb. And whether they are physical mountains or whether they are metaphorical mountains, you know, if you know, you've got this big vision for your business, if you've got this health obstacle, like I had to get over cancer, I had to recover from that. That was a mountain of my life. Rebuilding my finances after bankruptcy was a mountain of my life. Getting through the divorce that I went through was, you know, again, there are all these mountains. And one of the things that I love about mountain climbers is that they first of all know what it is that they want. So I love the whole metaphor of climbing. I also love the metaphor of ascending. I love the word ascend. And so it's not just climbing a physical mountain, it's raising your energy level, it's raising your state of consciousness to a higher and higher level. You don't, just like running a marathon, if you decided, you know, the day I just took my brother's challenge and wanted to, I said, okay, I'm going to run a marathon. I didn't just go out the very next day and run 26 miles, 44 kilometers. I didn't do that the next day. There were things that I had to prepare for. I had to prepare my body. I had to prepare my mind. In the training, I had to deal with certain setbacks. So along the path of life, there are going to be setbacks. So if we're going to use the idea of we're climbing a mountain, there might be a path that we're following. At some point, there might have been a landslide or a big rock has now fallen onto the path. We've got to decide, are we going to figure out a way around this rock? Or are we going to say, oh, well, I guess it just wasn't meant to be. So there's a lot of negative use of the universe and the divine guidance in our lives, where it's teaching people to give up, because they'll say, oh, well, if it was meant to be, it just would have worked out by now. You know, or if it's meant to be, it's just meant to be. Well, that's not, you're never going to get there. You have to radically participate in manifesting blessings in your life. God is going to work with you, but only, you know, to the point that you work with the energy and, you know, that's supplied to you and this mindset that you have. So, yeah, I love the whole climbing metaphor. And I realized when I was 42 years old and when I was at the lowest part of my life, I didn't want to be that person anymore. I didn't want to feel that negative dread every morning anymore. And at that point, the only solution that I saw to it was ending my life, because I didn't think that there was hope. But once I discovered that there was hope, I completely shifted. And I started doing the work necessary to prepare my mind, to prepare my body, to learn new things. I look at how our babies grow. They're constantly learning. They try to stand up and walk, and they fall down, and they hurt, and they cry. But then they get right back up, and they try again. They don't go, oh, well, I guess walking's just not meant for me.
Did you have a chance to climb any real mountain? Any physical mountain?
Well, I have climbed some physical mountains, not specifically as a mountain climber. There are a few that I would really like to do. I have heard some. I don't really have a desire to climb Mount Everest, although I'm in awe of people who do. But I know people who have gone to Africa and climbed Mount Kilimanjaro. I think I've
mountain. I wish to climb the Kilimanjaro.
Oh, is that your? So we're going to have to do that together then. But I also learned late in life. I was actually 35 years old before I learned how to snow ski. And so I have skied on some of the tallest mountains in the United States, in Colorado and Utah. And so I love the ascending up. Now, of course, I went up on a ski lift. I didn't hike up and then ski down. But I do love the idea and the metaphor of mountains. The other thing that's really interesting is people say, well, I want to get to the top of my mountain. But realize that nobody ever climbed Mount Everest or Mount Kilimanjaro and stayed up there, right? You know, it gives you a nice view of where you want to go next, but then you climb down that.
It is about climbing the next mountain, I guess, yeah.
Right. You climb down into the next valley, you build up the next supplies, and you go climb the next mountain. Yeah. So this idea of wanting to stay on the mountain peaks of life is just not realistic.
No, I don't think anyone, I mean, people think that they do want to be on the peak all the time, but not really.
No.
Bruce, I would like to ask you, what is the best way to connect with you for all our listeners that will want to be in touch with you?
Oh, thank you for that opportunity. It's the easiest place is at Bruce Van Horn. That's Bruce, B-R-U-C-E, Van Horn, V-A-N-H-O-R-N, all one word, brucevanhorn.com. And from there, I do a podcast called Life is a Marathon. And you can go to that directly at lifeisamarathon.com. I'm well into my 400 episodes. I've had 2.7 million downloads from 213 countries. That has been an amazing, wild ride. Podcasting, as you know, is such an amazing way to connect with an audience that you never would have otherwise connected with. And I get to, I'm not like you, I don't do a lot of interviews. So a lot of them are just monologues where I talk about mindset and philosophy. You know, how do we climb these mountains of our life? How do we run the marathon of life with an endurance mindset? So that's what I do. But brucevanhorn.com is where anybody can get in touch with me if they have interest in coaching or business consulting. Happy to talk with you about that. I have there's also links to my online group coaching community called Climber Community. And you can either get there through a link on my website or you can go to climbercommunity.net. And happy to have you join us there. You can follow me on Twitter. I have an amazing, well over half a million Twitter followers. And I love social media. I love Instagram and Twitter. I'm not so great at Facebook, but Twitter and Instagram is where you can come hang out with me on social media.
That's great. And we will have all the links in the show notes of this interview, of course, in our site. So I would like to thank you so much. It has been an enjoyable time to talk with you and to listen to you.
I have loved talking with you. This has been such a pleasure. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to share my story with your audience.
Thank you for sharing it, and bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye.
And for you, our listeners, until the next time, it all goes down to this. You either reach or miss. Keep reaching your goals and vision. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Reach or Miss Show, the podcast for the customer-focused entrepreneur. You can find all the information, links, and resources that was mentioned at the show in our website, reachormiss.com. See you next week.